I'm so excited to talk to Mark Hamrick, who's got a great Substack, longtime contributor here at WGN Radio. Mark, good to hear your voice here on the evening side. Thank you.
It's always great to be with you, John. Thanks so much.
Got a lot of data today to mull over. I want to zoom out just a little bit. You know, we've had this war in Iran and the back and forth of do we have peace, do we not? The crude oil bounces, and suffice to say, gas prices are higher than they probably would have been had we not had a war. We had the tariffs last year and maybe now percolating again. Yet despite all that, the jobs numbers are really solid. I know inflation's higher than we want it to be, but we have quite a resilient economy, it seems, underneath that is trying and seems to be holding on to its positivity despite what is really a lot of headwinds that would slow a weaker economy down, Mark.
I mean, it's almost as if you were writing my script for me, John, so I appreciate that. But we'll take resilience, that R word, over recession, the bad R word, any day of the week. And as you know, about 3 years ago, when the Fed was putting the pedal to the metal, raising interest rates, trying to bash inflation down, when we had the problems related really directly stemming from the war in Ukraine and the supply chain disruptions that occurred then, many economists, including those that I was surveying at the time, were saying that there was about a 50% chance of a recession over the coming 12 months at that time. Now, if you ask those same economists, they would say the odds are still elevated, but not unacceptably high, probably somewhere in the order of, let's say, 1 in 5 or 20%, a recession being the technical definition, not the sort of malaise that the Americans are feeling right now about the economy.
Right. How we feel about it is a whole other question, and I'll get to that in a moment. You know, and I don't want to rah-rah too much because, honestly, it also feels like a little missed opportunity for a more roaring economy. Like, I wonder where we'd be without the Iran conflict, where we'd be without Liberation Day and subsequent tariffs. And I'm not making policy judgments about that. I'm just looking at where the economy would be and where economists think we would be had it not been for those two factors, Mark.
Well, I think you're onto something there, John, and that is these were self-inflicted wounds that have really injected uncertainty and headwinds into the U.S. economy. Going back to the tariffs of so-called Liberation Day, where the Federal Reserve was inclined to begin cutting interest rates, remember, and then, of course, thought, well, maybe not, because if there's two impacts that the tariffs can have, it is to raise prices at the same time slowing economic activity. But it's also fair to say that the severity of both of those inputs has not been as dramatic as had been feared. But as you said, here we are once again coming into the year. Things were looking pretty good. We had the fiscal stimulus, whether you love the budget busting part of the so-called one big beautiful bill, that's for politicos to decide or argue over. But the reality is that we did have this tailwind from the tax cut coming into the year, and lo and behold, then of course the war in the Middle East, the Middle East conflict. And so this has been the new trigger for a new round of inflation, and really putting a kind of a hamper around the consumers who would like to be freed of this Damocles of inflation that they've been burdened by now. As Chairman Warsh at the Fed said just yesterday, inflation has run above their 2% target for more than 5 years.
I think the resiliency is a great story. I just wonder where it's coming from, and where I suspect, and I think a lot of people feel like it's coming from, are from the haves, who now are fine to buy and have more. And I don't want to say have-nots, that's such a derogatory term, but you know what I'm saying, people that don't have as much means, they're not spending as much, Mark. I mean, I really think we are a top-heavy, resilient economy right now.
Yes, and the technical analogy that is often used, and I lean on it maybe too much, the so-called K-shaped economy. If you think about sort of the upper leg of the K moving up, that's those who are people who possess assets, own their home, are heavily exposed to the stock market, even if only for their retirement savings. And then the people who don't have those things, they're renters, they don't get the benefit of the strong rally in the stock market. And they certainly are people that don't have a lot of money in savings. Those savings have been drawn down It's one of the reasons why today we had a pretty decent looking set of economic statistics released, where we had spending rising by 0.3% in June, but incomes were rising just 0.2%. So what does that mean? People are drawing from their savings. And as we know, that money is not going to last forever.
My other worry about all this is that you've wasted a perhaps even more strong economy for the last 2 years that you could have had. And, you know, the tailwinds don't ride forever, right? I wonder if there is a breaking point, and maybe that's too strong of a term, and you just said economists aren't too worried. But what if this conflict doesn't end in the fall, but we see the Strait of Hormuz a problem for the next couple of years, right? I mean, I don't know at what point a stymied Middle East can start to permeate deeper into the economy and start to really now become a headwind that is stronger than the tailwinds behind it.
Well, you're definitely right, John. The risks geopolitically around the world are quite huge. We've got these two major conflicts, and you could probably count more than that. Obviously, the war against Ukraine continues. If anything, that's becoming a hotter war than it was before, and Russia has come under assault in ways that Vladimir Putin couldn't have possibly imagined. And you've got a widening Middle East conflict that isn't just including the United States, Israel, and Iran. And as we've seen, Americans have come under attack, as have other countries. And at the same time, the administration wants to give Saudi Arabia the ability to create, essentially have nuclear capability. So the world is not becoming a less dangerous place, but the one thing we haven't talked about, it does show up as the primary factor in growth in GDP is investment around artificial intelligence, and you have to include data centers in that. But we know also that there are just so many billions of dollars being spent on these capital expenditures that alone may not, number one, be sustainable, and number two, probably will not deliver an evenly distributed payoff. There will be winners and losers. There will certainly be losers. If we think about the way that the internet presented itself, think about the sorting of winners and losers in that process, where we can all think of names that were dynamic at the time but didn't make the cut. Of course, we had the dot-com bubble and bust. I'm not predicting the same thing happens, because now you've got actual companies making a profit of what they're investing, but there is going to be some dead money there. And so that's another risk, the lack of sustainability and potentially the lack of profitability for all the money that's being invested.
The Hamrick Brief, Hamrick Brief, is on Substack. And just scrolling through it, you post a bunch. You give us a really good briefs. I like the brief briefly that came out yesterday. And you've been a great resource for us. I look forward to reading more and talking with you more, Mark, here on WGN. Okay?
Always a pleasure. And it is free to sign up, so there's no pain involved other than clicking your finger.
I like that. The hamrickbrief.substack.com. And we'll link to it on the blog post. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, John. You take good care.
Yeah.